This is Homefront, South Dakota, and please give me your name, your age, and your
My
hometown.
name is James H. Keenitz, and Hot Springs is where I live now. I live in the State Soldiers Home. And what else?
And how old are you?
Oh, I'm 91 years old. I was born August 1st, 1916.
Thank you for your service. And I was wondering if you could give me your branch of service and your rank and
Okay, I was a tech sergeant with the 781st Squadron of the 465th Bomb Group. And we were stationed in Italy, and we bombed targets in 9 different countries occupied by the Nazis over there. So.
just in case we need to cross-reference your interview with your photo. I'm just going to describe what you're wearing. It's a blue striped shirt, and you're also wearing a hat with some pins on it, and your hat says the 781st Bomb Squadron. There's a really beautiful framed case with medals in it and from your service, and I was wondering, Jim, to start off, if you could just describe what we're looking at and what the significance is.
Well, this one here is a Distinguished Flying Cross. That is the most important decorative medal. And this one here is the World War Victory Medal. And this is the American campus, or what you want to call it, for and this here is you was used overseas on the European, both in where we were and in England and all over. And that's 5 battle stars that's on there that we earned from. And this one here is just a medal for here in the United States, and that's the Good Conduct Medal. And this here is our combat flight medal. I earned that. You had to fly so many missions to get the medal, and then after that, you flew every time you flew so many more, whether you got a star with to go with it. And this year was issued by the United States government to the outfit that for the 465th Bomb Group. You flew with it twice, so we earned that twice.
And that's a small rectangular
Yeah.
kind of blue medal.
And this here is a tech sergeant. And of course, this is a 465th Bomb Group, and that's a 781st Squadron. And this is the wings, that combat wings. And these are just wings if you're just a, was just on, like on a plane that just hauls stuff around the country or something like that.
Okay.
So,
And what about this one?
Well, I'm earned marksman with both of those.
Okay, that
So,
one's a cross, a kind of cross symbol, it looks like, or a,
yeah. I really don't. That just came out, and I don't know why it was designed like that at all. I can't explain that. And it was 15th Air Forces where I was in, and when was overseas.
At the very beginning, when Jim was describing the medals, he was going from right to left, so starting with the blue and white and red striped medal, and then ending with the blue and gold striped. Okay, I'm going to just set this up here. I have a list of interview questions, but before I start asking some questions, is there anything in particular that you would like to share from your experience in the war?
Well, the main thing there is one mission we didn't get back home. We had to make a forced landing on a little island called Vis in Yugoslavia, and then there happened to be an American small American boat there, a Navy, and they took us home back to over to Bury Italy the next day. And so that mission, we didn't, that plane is gone forever because it, there was no way to get it back. And I don't know. Oh, we had a couple of real hard missions that, like we bombed Friedrichshafen, Germany, and that was over 600 miles from our base in Italy. And by the time we got our bombs dropped, we was in a B-24 is a four-engine bomber, and we was down to only an engine and a half because three of them was knocked out, or two of them was knocked out, and one of them was having engine problems, so it was only had half power on it, so we only had one good engine left, and we still had to maintain altitude for 250 miles in order to clear the mountains just north of Venice, Italy, to get back to where we was at. And people said that you couldn't do that on the B-24, but they don't know, but we did, and we got all the way home. We flew all the way home on an engine and a half. And we wasn't supposed to be able to do that, but it, so you don't know what the, and then the other time was when we shot up so bad over Vienna, Austria, that all we like that's when we had to stop at the island of Ys and leave the plane there, and they took us back to Italy. So those are the two worst. But over Vienna, we got two engines knocked out 4 out of the 6 times we was over Vienna. And then all the rest of them, we'd get hit lots of times and lose an engine or two engines, something like that. But it was, we just stayed right with the squadron and came home. So that's about all I can tell you.
Can you tell me again how many missions you flew and what your job was on those missions?
I was most of them, I was top turret gunner, except when we flew, our crew flew the lead ship. If we flew lead ship, then I had to stay at my radio desk because when we dropped the bombs were dropped, they called me and told me where was at, how many bombs had dropped, and where we were at. And I got on the radio and called our base and just told them. There was no, they never repeated or nothing, because you over there radios it was altogether different than using them over here. You didn't give any information that was, we just give them where the bombs were dropped and how many was dropped.
So otherwise, you were actually on a plane and a gunner on the plane when you were.
Yeah, I was a radio operator gunner. That's what I was on. Because I was an enlisted man, I was not an officer.
And did you say you flew 50 missions or?
We were credited with 50 missions, but there were some of those missions that were double missions. And we flew long ways on some of our missions. We flew from our place up and bombed a target in France that we was a third farther to get back home than we would if we'd went up to the 8th Air Force in England. And just things like that. And then we were credited with different things, and it's been a long time ago.
What did it feel like to you when you were hit, when you were on a plane that was hit? Could you describe that experience?
Well, all you thought of what you was going to do and how you was going to get out of there if you had to. Now, this one time, the pilot did order us in bailout position, but then he decided that we could finally get to that little island in Vis in Utica, so they called us up and we went back up and laid down on the floor and landed in crash position, and that plane was gone forever. So, but other than that, why, I used to, I was in the top turret, and when the bomb bay doors was open, why, I could see any damage that we got hit in the middle or something like that. And that one time, fuel was coming out of the wing off to my left. It was like this, and I was looking back, and that fuel was coming over and going through over and going out to bomb bay. And that's the one where we didn't get back. We only got to the island of Visk because there's no way we could get across the Adriatic Sea with, because we didn't have enough fuel anymore.
I just have a couple of questions here that you mentioned that you were enlisted. How aware were you of the war that was going on overseas before Pearl Harbor was attacked? Did you think America would get involved? Or...
Well, when I was working for Beach Aircraft Corporation in Wichita, Kansas, when on that Sunday that the Japs bombed Pearl Harbor, and that was a really shocking moment for me. And but we knew that the way things was going with Japan and Germany, that's the, and what we were building was trainer planes, bombardier trainer and navigator trainer and pilot trainer planes is what we was building in Beechcraft. And so I knew we was going to get into war sometime, but I didn't know when. And without me knowing it, Beechcraft had got me 3 deferments that I didn't know anything about. And but then when the in 1943, they decided they was going to have, that was really in bad trouble, and they was going to, that's when they was picking people from all over the United States then. And that's when I was, Hot Springs here sent me a letter, said that I got to get back here because I was going to have to go into service whether I wanted to or not. So I didn't enlist, I was drafted.
Okay. How did you feel when you got that letter?
Well, I really can't say I was jubilant, but I wasn't, but I was expecting it. I figured at some time it was going to happen because, you know, when you're working in an aircraft plant, you hear a lot of stuff, and we knew that it was getting worse over here and over here. And when they called me, took me into this service, they took a lot of guys because there was from Hot Springs here. There was, when I got here, then we went to Leavenworth, Kansas, and I don't know, there must have been over 30 of us. So they was, and they was doing that all over the United States. They was taking excessive draftees because they figured they needed it, and we did. And so, but I knew it was going to be eventually that I was going to have to go, so I just, my wife and I just came back here, and she went to work at the bank down, First National Bank of the Black Hills down here when she got here, and I was in the service for 2 years and 10 months.
Do you think that being in the war changed you? And if so, how?
No, because, and I think the reason it didn't change me because our family was poor, very poor. So I didn't get to finish. I only have 2 years of high school. And by the time I was 18 and 19 years old, I was running a bottling works. And so I had done so many things that this year was just like taking another job. That's what it was. And I just went along and done what they told me to do. And I didn't criticize anything. I just went along with the flow, you might say. Mm-hmm.
Did you write letters home often? And were you able to describe what you're actually experiencing in those letters? Or
no, we didn't do that. Mm-mm. No, I would every like when I was overseas, every month when I get my pay, well, I'd send it home, and I would just write notes to my wife and just, but I didn't write long letters saying, well, telling her this and all that, because I didn't figure that it was that she would, it was good for her to know, like if we was going out and getting all shot up and if I went on a series of missions, you know, for a month there, and which we got shot up an awful lot. And there was many times when we didn't, was wondering whether we was going to be able to make it back to the base or not, but we was always very, very fortunate and got back, except that went well, that one time we got back because the Navy took us back. So I felt very fortunate that we just didn't, because I knew fellas that got shot right out of the sky right beside us. And on one mission over Vienna, we was dropping our bombs, and the bomb bay doors opened, and I was up in my turret and looking backwards, you know, all at once, the plane number two plane down there like that, the wing, his wing was right up, just putting her in our bomb bay. It was just below, it couldn't have been over that far below our plane and towards the back end there. And it's just been, the reason for that was because the pilot of that plane got flak, hit him in the leg, and when it done that, when it went done this to him, but he had a good co-pilot that seen what it was, and he acted down before, because we in other words, I say we come that close to get knocked out of the by our own planes.
Wow, and you were measuring with your hands. That was about a foot.
Yeah, it wasn't over that far, because on the at back end of it even looked like it was closer than that, but that's about what it was underneath the bomb bay, and it was about a third of the wing of their right wing that was under our bomb bay. And they're playing like that because the flying number two position, they flew below, see. If he'd have been flying up a little bit higher and got hit and that come up like that, he would have hit us. So, but then he was done, that pilot was done flying, because it was a nasty wound that he got on his left leg. But his co-pilot then took over the rest of the way home, and then they had their crew, I had to get another pilot after that. Because that's the way it was. See, you belong to a crew, and that's, I only flew one mission that I didn't fly with our own crew. And I still can't even tell you the name of the pilot or the crew, because they was ones that came in as replacements from later on. But they didn't have a top turret one time and flew over in up in Yugoslavia, and I guess they decided that we was off and sitting around not doing anything, so they sent me along as the top turret gunner.
But mostly you were with the same crew.
Yeah, all but that one mission was flown with our same crew, the same people all the time. Yeah.
Did you form close friendships with that same crew that you always flew with?
Oh yeah, and there's only three of them left, three of us left out of the 10, and we didn't have reunions. But the one, the engineer that's still alive, he never went to any reunions anywhere, and I went to a lot of them, and the bombardier was the other one, and he went to several of them, so I got to see him several ones. But then towards the last, why he quit going to them, so I figured he's physically unfit, and I don't know what condition the engineer is in. So we have, there hasn't been any communication between the three of us now, oh, I'd say for about 3 years, 3 or 4 years now.
You had a lot of close calls during your service. I mean, it's amazing that you made it home when you think about it.
Well, there was many times that we felt real fortunate that we even got back to our base, because you know there was many times when we'd have two engines shot out, and we would be flying with just two engines, you know. Well, and when you got the two engines shot out, all those fuel tanks along there they got it first. The flak went through them and to knock out the engines, and I'd sit up there in the top turret, and I could see the spray of fuel coming out of that wing until those tanks was empty. But you know, so but a B-24, you could fly it with it didn't take all the engines, and it the B-24 is the most unheralded plane in World War II, and it was one of the best. And because they, all of the experts, you know, of years, they declared that the B-17 was better than the 24, and it was not. No way, shape, or form. As a matter of fact, there's records in Washington, D.C. right now that says the B-24 can fly higher, farther, faster, and carry a heavier bomb load. And that's when I was going to gunnery school, that's what the instructors down there, they kept saying that the B-24 couldn't carry hardly any bombs. And we could carry more bombs than the B-17. So it's, you know, there's a lot of stuff when that was spread around that wasn't the truth, that nobody knew about. So.
Why do you think that was? Do you know any reason why they would say that?
No, it's just I have no idea why that was done that way, but it's the truth. And I know one time when we got ready to, I went to briefing in the morning, and you got a sheet like this that had everything on there, what bombs you were carrying, and where your target was, and how many planes was going on that, and then the top part of it had the B-17s up there. And it said on there the B-17s will be taken off 2 hours before the B-24s. And I thought, well, God, that's going to be nice. They're going to go in there and they're going to get all chewed up. But then at the same time, then the target where the gun emplacements around the targets will be built up. So in case of anybody else coming here, we'd be coming in there 2 hours later. Well, we got to the IP and started a bomb run, and the bombardier had the plane. Then he opened up the bomb bay door, and those 17s that took off 2 hours before we did was just right down there. And I found out that with the same bomb load, 600 miles, it took them 2 hours longer to get there than it did us. So you learned a lot of things that weren't. The people didn't tell you. You just had to learn them yourself. And the only things I'm going to tell you is something that actually happened to us. I'm not going to tell you what I think about anything. It's just like I was telling you about coming back from Friedrichshafen on an engine and a half. Now, nobody will believe that, but I don't care what they do, but it actually happened to us, and we know it did. So, and the 781st Squadron knows it too. So.
Jim, how did it affect you to be so close to, crashing or dying? How did you deal with that?
It never. I never got excited or anything. I don't know why. I just took it for granted, and all I had done was thinking about things of what I'm going to do for this or do for that, you know. And there was times, a lot of times, when we had two engines shot out, I didn't even pay any attention to it because I knew we was going to get home anyway. And when you get two engines shot out, why, there's other holes in the plane there too, you know. Our ball turret gunner got hit with flak when he was in his turret. And flak come through the right beside, right in front of our pilot, and came right through the side of the plane, went right past his face, and got up right up about in there, and it broke in two, and one piece of it went out through the top of the cabin up there in front of it, and another piece went out and went there, and that one, when it went out, it only missed my head by about that far. It never touched my turret, but it when I went in there and looked up through there, why that it couldn't have missed the direction it was going, it couldn't have missed my my head by much farther than that, because my head is only about the, just right up the back of the turret. Just things like that happen, and you say, okay, so what? I got through that one. But you know, actually, I was surprised that I never did get reeled down and get scary at all. I mean, I just figured because I was older than the rest of them, and it was part of my job. It's because I had worked so many jobs before I come into the service and was told what to do, and you just took everything for granted and done what you're supposed to do, and that was all. You just went along with it. So I suppose if a lot of kids got, a lot of younger people got excited, you know, about it, I never did. I never got excited about it. So.
So you saw other kids, younger ones, get excited, but you kind of kept your cool.
Yeah. Well, our tail gunner, and you'd hear him talking on you know, telling what happened, you know, and the tail gunner got excited when the ball turret gunner got hit, because he wasn't that far back there. It could have been him too, you know. But really, our crew was pretty well organized, and we didn't get that scared. None of us did. So when we just went along with the flow, whatever happened, we just figured out what we was going to do, how, if something else happened, you know, if we had to bail out, we figured out where our parachutes were off. We had the harness on, but our parachutes was laying off to one side. Just things like that. And you just got to thinking about what she's going to do, and you never got excited. At least we didn't.
Sounds like you just focused on what you had to do in the moment to deal with whatever was happening.
That is true. That is so true.
Did you find yourself thinking about why you were fighting the war and the larger, what was at stake for, like, the American country? Did
No.
That ever come?
I never got that involved at all. I just done what they told me to do, and that was it. And but that, you know, there were several times there that I didn't think we was going to get back, and what I was thinking about is, it was looking down to see where we were at, to see whether it was going to go to Switzerland, if I could get hit, bail out, and make my way to Switzerland or something like that. Which was, and the rest of the crew, they talked about then, if we got a chance, well, that's where we would go. And now I found out in a couple of, just here in this last year, that was a big mistake. Switzerland was operated by the Germans, and the Swiss people was working with the Germans, and there was a lot of guys that bailed out that wound up, got into Switzerland, and a lot of them got killed there by the Swiss and by the Germans. So it wasn't the right place to go. So you learned a lot of things.
After the fact,
yeah. So now I'm glad I never went to Switzerland. Never had to go there. But I don't know, to me, in one sense of the word, it actually, what I was doing was just, I was on another job. And I just wanted to do my job and do it right. So I don't ever remember getting, you know, like that. Never, but even as bad as we shot up, I didn't. I just figured out what we were supposed to do and what we was going to do, and, you know, and how we was going to do it. And so I was very fortunate that I didn't get excited. So, and our whole crew was pretty much that way. I don't know, it was just a well-trained crew.
What do you think instilled that kind of work ethic in you, where you could just look at it like that, another job to do right?
Well, because like I said, I actually started having my first job I ever had. I was only 10 years old, making Eskimo pies in an ice cream plant. And then by the time I was 14 years old, I'd get out of school one day, and the next morning I was to work at 7 o'clock in the morning and work 10 hours a day, 6 days a week, until right through Labor Day. And then school always started the day after Labor Day, and then I'd go back to school. And I didn't get to do any of the stuff that kids my age done in the summertime, like learn to swim and go hunting and all that stuff. I didn't. And I had to do that because our family was so poor.
Okay, so you just learned really
Yeah,
young.
So I learned really young. And I really think that that's what helped me when I was flying. It was just like being on another job.
Okay.
So.
For those of us like me who didn't live during that time period, World War II, what do you want us to remember about World War II?
I've never given any thought. I'm not going to lie to you because I've just never given any thought. I just figured, well, everybody's going along, and just like my own children, they were born. My oldest son, that lives up here in Black Hawk now, was born on June 13th, 1944, and the day that he was born on over here, I was on a bombing mission over Munich, Germany, and we was getting shot up a little bit. So, and actually, I probably didn't tell you, but whenever we started getting hit, and started losing inches and stuff, I said goodbye to my family at home.
How did you do that?
Just right, and just talk to them while I was in my turret all by myself, up there, and just all I would do is just say goodbye to my wife, and in that case, why I had to send. I didn't know that the day that I was older. I didn't learn about it till about a week or so later when she sent me a picture of her and him, and I still have it in my over here in my up there in the soldiers' home. So,
Wow.
but
Oh, go ahead.
I don't know. It's some there was some people we could see that got real excited, and I'm glad that we didn't have anybody on our crew that did that. So, in other words, in one way or another, if you want to look at way I could look at it, is me doing what I done in World War II wasn't any different than going to work someplace and doing a job for somebody. And I, when before I retired, I'd spent 26 years with the Bureau of Reclamation, and I was on the Angostura project out here for, I helped build part of it, and then I helped work 10 years with the Bureau of Reclamation on the project, and then I managed the project for 5 years after that, and so it's just everything just was the same. It wasn't any different when I was flying combat than when I was working. It
Wow.
was just a job, another job, telling the truth about it. And now for what anybody, the rest of the crew thought, I can't tell you. I wouldn't know. But I never seen any of our crew really get excited at all. And I'm glad they didn't. Yeah. So.
So when you would get together after the war with your crew members, you would get together sometimes?
Well, the only time we'd get together is when the 781st Squadron would have a reunion. As a matter of fact, here 2 years ago, our 781st Squadron had a reunion. It was in Rapid City, South Dakota. And of course, I called not no, nobody but me from our crew. Well, there was only three of us left, and I thought maybe the bombardier might be there because I'd seen him at other reunions. But he said no, he couldn't do it. So I was the only one from our outfit that was there. And we went out to Ellsworth Air Force Base and spent one whole day out there and things like that. So, But that's the last one I went to then. I don't go to it anymore.
And did you talk about your war experience with your fellow crew members, or just
No. Everybody seemed to know what the other guy went through, so there was no use talking. No.
what did you talk about when you would see each other?
Well, I don't even remember. I'm not going to tell you this or that when I don't remember, because like I say, that's 63 years ago.
Sure.
So you don't do, you don't, I just don't remember things like that. You just, yeah. The only time we talk about anything together was if we decided to, like, when we was in Italy there, if we was going to go to Isla Capri, or we went to Rome and went to Naples and places like that. Why, then we talk about it, about when we was going to go and who all was going to go, and that was it.
Is there anything else that you'd like to share about your experience that you think people would be interested in knowing before we end the interview?
Well, I'm not that an intelligent person to try to figure out what other people would think, you know. So I'd just as soon not comment, make a comment on that, because I might be wrong and I might be right, and I would, if I'm not completely right, then I don't want it, to be honest. No, so I don't know what they thought. We just our crew just went along, as just like we had a, it was just like we all had a job. That's what, more than anything. And when we'd go someplace, like to Rome, we went through the Vatican City, and one of our crew members was a Catholic, so I stood right beside him when, and the what's the big shot
The Pope.
the Pope came through on, he was riding on a thing there, and he had four guys carrying him, you know, and then he would stick out his hand as he went by, you know, like that. And our engineer was a Catholic, and he had this thing that he wanted the Pope to touch, and the Pope touched it, and when the Pope brought his hand down, I could have touched his hand too, but I didn't. He's that close. So, you know, things like that happened, and we enjoyed them.
So it sounds like you had some neat experiences, like on your off time traveling in Europe a little bit.
Yeah, we would go different places. We went down to Bari, and we went up into Cerignola, and I shouldn't have told you about the Cerignola one, because that was, we were not a drunk that time. But we went to Bari to different things that they put on the show or something down there. We'd get down there, and then when we went, our whole crew went, spent a week on the Isle of Capri, and that for when we went to Rome that time, we spent 4 days up there, and they took us up on a, they flew us. No, we went up in a vehicle, and then when we come back from Rome, we had to hitchhike all the way back. Well, we got back all right, so just things like that that you remember. But I guess the only thing I would want to say is actually what I'd done, speaking for myself, I mean, or what we'd done for flying, to me it was all just another job. And I didn't think that much more of it, and like I said though, when we start get shot up so many times, and there was a lot of times that I said goodbye to my family while we were still airborne, you know. Other than that's all I can say.
Jim, thank you very much for contributing to this recording of Veterans.
Well, you got me to thinking about some things I'd forgot about. Hadn't even given any thought, or not forgot about, hadn't given any thought to for 50, 60 years, you know. So I, if it's anything you wanted, why, and if I was any kind of a help, why, I appreciate it.